Nu välkomnar jag Chris Saar. Välkommen.
I have to move it this side. That's okay? Can you hear me okay? Okay. My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. I'm also a recovered drug addict. I probably need to mention that. And can you hear me up there?
No.
No. Oh, I can't. I don't know if I can do this. I get a little tingly. Y'all are good looking. I agree with what Meyer said. Oh my gosh. Y'all ought to travel around with us and see the audiences we usually talk to. I mean, we were just talking to old geezers, all busted up, and you know, and it's like, y'all, man. Y'all are good looking. Welcome. Everybody, Myers and I were laughing about it on the plane over. Everybody's so possessive of their program. You know, it worked for me, and it ought to work for you. And it's like, but you don't understand. What worked for you may not work for the next guy. And that's why we do this literature stuff. It's because it kind of keeps the message the same for all of us. And everybody likes this kind of talk. You know, we're going to get a chance to speak a couple hours tomorrow on sponsorship. And a lot of you guys, you're going to come and you. I mean, that's what a great room. And until one of us says something that you don't agree with, and then you're pissed. You know, they're so passionate. They're such nice. And until we say something that you don't agree with, and then it's like, you know, you're pissed. I don't know what to say. You are absolutely free to agree with anything I say or disagree with anything I say. And the same, I'm sure, with Myers. We are not, you know, representative of AA or AA gurus or blah, blah, blah. If I don't do anything really stupid in a couple of weeks, I'll have 21 years of sobriety. And I'm... which is a pretty cool thing for me. And longer I'm sober, the more humble I get about it. Because the truth of the matter is, and it's just God's grace that I'm able to do what I do. Some days I'm just a piss poor example of what the fellowship's all about. I'm as human as they come. And for any of you that kind of want to take a shot and set one of us up on a little pedestal, quit. Don't do that. That's how we get drunk. And I'm honored that you guys have asked us to come over. I want to thank everybody real quick, and I'm trying to remember it tomorrow. All of you guys that helped organize this, and especially you cats that dropped in big bills in there. I saw some of that chicken chip change going there too. But I mean, some of you guys had that big bills. This is expensive. God, it used to be when we travel someplace, a couple hundred dollars would get you anywhere. And it's just not like that. So somebody really had to thank you for your generosity for allowing us to do this. And I got a couple of things I want to mention to you. There's so many people out there, I never seem to get used to it, this taking shots at us. Us is not just me and Myers, but little big book thumpers, the cats that are carrying the message. There's so much of the world out there that's in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the other fellowships that are not doing what we ask them to do, but they're the vocal cats that are taking shots at those of us that are actually doing what we were being asked to do. Make sense? It's like it shouldn't be that way, but it is. And I'll reiterate this, and if I don't say it tomorrow, Myers and I don't want to do anything that would cause any kind of divisiveness whatsoever. I did a talk in Toronto not long ago, and set up by a bunch of cats in Cocaine Anonymous, and they were the nicest people, but they didn't go through the proper protocol because it was too much damn bureaucracy. And so they set up this little deal themselves, and they came up with the money, and they got me up there, and we did this little talk, and it was a pretty good little gathering, a little knuckleheads, and we caught so much flack for that, and I'm so sorry that we did that in the guise that we don't want to be divisive. Make sense? If you are going to open discussion meetings and you like those meetings and you just relish hearing about the guy's weed eater, then who are we to say that you shouldn't be able to go to those? But on the same breath, who are you to say that we shouldn't be able to get into a room and study the literature and do it the way we do it? Y'all understand, I know a lot of y'all have heard stuff of ours out there, and so I'm not going to say anything particularly original tonight. I only have one story, and I'd like to share that briefly with you, but this thing called perspective, you know, like I know some of you guys, you got caught with some alcohol, and you got in trouble with the law maybe, and you came to AA, and you liked it, and you know, the women are obviously drop-dead gorgeous, and the coffee, with which I'll probably have to pick up a new desire chip for. What is this? I'm used to that English coffee, a little instant. This stuff is like rocket fuel. I don't know. So much for sleep tonight. I don't know. What is it? Grinding my teeth. You know, what is it? But I work for a treatment center up in the Hill Country. I worked for this hospital for about 15 years, and I watch a lot of people come to that hospital, and I get to listen to so many people who have such a skewed misrepresentation of what AA and CA and NA is all about. You know, there's so much crap out there disguised as recovery, and these people come in, and so I'm watching from one perspective, and some of y'all would never get to see that perspective. I'm on the firing line watching people die of this disease every day. So sometimes, buddy, I do. I know Myers does too. We come across kind of hot and heavy sometimes. And I know some of you guys, you know, you don't even think this is a fatal illness. And so why should you identify with our passion? And yet some of you, like me, damn near died getting to this program. I mean, guys, I'm 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't get well. I'm drinking like a son of a gun. I can't not drink. And I'm in the late 70s. I found some other outside issues to add to my pharmaceutical wonderment. You know, I mean, I'm a mess, you know. And I thought the drinking was killing me. Add a little cocaine to that and see what happens. And I mean, I'm nuts. And then a little methamphetamine on top of that. And then some little doggy downers. And if I couldn't get that, I'd get pot. I got to tell you guys, because I was talking to somebody earlier, I'm not a big fan of pot. I know some of you, a lot of you guys probably are, but I just... Every time I would try to switch from the alcohol and the other stuff because it was causing me problems, I'd go to pot because it's natural. And I mean, hell, half of Europe, it's legal. You can just, you know, it's herb. It's not drug. And I'd put it in my system. Of course, I mean, instantly the stuff hits my bloodstream and I get paranoid, like, you know, and I go... I'm in the closet naked, you know, and the pizza guy's knocking on the door, you know, the pizza that I ordered, but I'm not about to answer the door because we all are affected a little bit different, but that was my deal, but I kept going back to it over and over and over again. I'm 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous and I can't get well, and I agree with exactly what my brother Myers said. You know, there was nobody in AA ever tried to hurt me. The worst knucklehead with the worst advice was coming from a place of love, trying to help. You just need to understand that I want to hear what I want to hear. Just like you this weekend, you're going to hear what you want to hear. You with me? There's people in here right now counting the number of times I cuss just because they like to bring it to my attention. I thought you weren't going to cuss anymore. Well, I'm not. Screw you. Okay. You hear what you want to hear. And I just like... And that's what I did in AA in those 7 years. And I mean, I want to get well. And I come in and I try to get my feet on the ground. And this little old guy over here with a big old beat up big book is, you know, all marked up. And he's telling me, and I'm pissed, maybe we want to look at these 12 steps. And this other little guy's going, no. And he'll get you after the deal. He says, listen, there's some well-meaning people in here. His heart's in the right place, but he's a little on the goofy side. He's a little eccentric, you know. Those steps will be there when you get ready to work them. You know, and when you get ready, the steps will work you. And I'm, what are you talking about? What? But he's giving me an out. You know, I'm seeing this four-step stuff. And somewhere down in there, even with one eye, I'm seeing this eighth and ninth step when I'm going to have to make some amends. And I don't want to make any amends. I'm not quite ready for that crap. I don't mind eating a little crow, but I mean, let's don't get... Easy does it. Rock on. That's the error. They're going to take it out of context every time. And the book says easy does it with your families. It doesn't say easy does it working the steps, but we're going to take that out of context. Easy does it. Well, what they don't understand is, and some of y'all don't understand, I'm the real McCoy. I'm suffering from a fatal progressive illness called alcoholism and drug addiction. I am not a disco drunk. I am not a hard drinker. I am not a moderate drinker. I'm the real alcoholic. Bill Wilson, over and over in the first 164, uses that term. It drives people crazy. What, you think there's a hierarchy in Alcoholics Anonymous? We're all alcoholics if we say we are. No, that's not true. You're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if you say you are. Welcome. In order to be an alcoholic, you've got to have certain symptoms. And Bill Wilson spends 60 of the first 100 pages where he just outlines the steps trying to explain to us what an alcoholic and an addict looks like. And if you don't have those symptoms, you ain't one of us. Got these little buttons on. I wear these little buttons, little issue man. Somebody's asking about it. I send them to you guys by the thousands. People all over Europe are wearing issue man. They don't have a clue what it means, but they're wearing this little guy. But if you look at it, and I sign your little books, I always put a little issue man in there. Because this is one of the things that helped me in early sobriety. The little X's on the outside are the outside issues. And everybody in here, we've all got issues. All God's kids got troubles. You know? And we've all got something. It's got the weed eater or your grandkid or the marriage or whatever. We all got stuff to talk about. But it's the internal, this little dark spot where his little soul is, his little heart is. That's what we're supposed to be focusing on. Because unless I recover spiritually, then the rest of this stuff's just going to take me down the toilet. You follow? And we got off the page years ago with the idea that we could come into meetings and use our meetings as dumping grounds for these issues and help each other fix these issues, and then we could stay sober. The problem is, a lot of us felt better after doing it. Who doesn't feel better after a good puke, huh? Let's just get straight here. You know, throw up a big old hurl of that, and then we'll get a big old paper towel. We'll clean it all up afterwards, and you'll leave that meeting feeling so. I'm so glad I shared that. You know, I'm glad you shared it too, because the rest of us are back here still cleaning the crap up. You follow? And that's what we do. That's what we do. That's what we turned all of our fellowships into. All the ones that I come in contact with, they're all going through the same thing. Now, if I got one beef with AA, it's that Alcoholics Anonymous stood there and allowed it to happen. In our idea of trying to become let's work with the fellowship. Let's work with the professionals. Let's work with everybody. Let's use these groups as a process group and talk through our day. And you see, there's not a one of us. It's like exactly what Myers was saying. All of us have done that in one way or another and benefited from it. How cool is that? My question is, how many people have we killed doing it? Selfish and self-centeredness is the root of my problems. And I think I have a right to come into a meeting and talk about my day. I don't. I have a right to come with the brothers that I came with, my little recovery group, my community. Let's go have coffee and let's talk about the day. I'm playing catch up with some of you guys I met in Denmark and England. I got some buds in here. Chris O from England came over. We got some catching up to do. But I'm not going to sit in a meeting and play catch up with him. Y'all understand? How selfish can we be? We have a solution, guys. The book on page 17 says we've got a common problem, alcoholism, for conversation's sake, and we have a common solution. What's the solution? 12 steps, a path to God, the spiritual experience. That's the solution. What? I don't know if I believe in God. Well, you're going to die. I hope not too slowly. I didn't come up with the 12 steps, but the book was written in such a way that we can pass this on each to the next. And that's what we're going to be talking about in the morning, a more effective way perhaps to transmit this message so that we can get more people off dead center and get them in sobriety. Here's the deal. If you want to get sober and you come into a meeting and you don't hear the solution, shame on us as a fellowship. Shame on me as a sponsor, as a responsible member. If you want to come in here and you don't have any intention of getting sober, well, shame on you. But I mean, you at least deserve the right to come into any one of our 12-step fellowships and at least get to hear what you need to do. You don't need to hear, just keep coming back, everything's going to be okay. Because that's the biggest lie we tell newcomers. It's crap, and we need to stop doing it. If you can just keep coming back and be okay, you're damn sure not one of us. You with us? We're going to talk about some more tomorrow. There's this little window of opportunity that's out there, folks. A lot of people want to make light of it. They want to call it the pink cloud. Ooh, he's on a pink cloud. And, you know, it's called God's grace, and you can be a smart ass and call it a pink cloud if you want to, with much sarcasm in your voice. But it's a gift. It's what we're all looking for. And I've experienced it several times, and I outlived it. You know, I mean, I sat there and waited. Oh, this is great. This is great. And then all of a sudden, the window of opportunity closes, and the little pink cloud goes away, and all of a sudden, reality hits you in the face, and now we're screwed. But why was I spinning my wheels and sitting on my butt for 3 months, sitting in AA, listening to you just tell me to keep coming back? Why didn't you tell me the truth that this was not going to stay permanent unless I did something to make sure that it did stay permanent? Guys, this is about recovered alcoholics. You know, I mean, it drives me crazy when we get into a situation where we have to walk on eggshells around people in our own fellowship about introducing ourselves as recovered alcoholics or recovered drug addicts in our other fellowships. By God, the book says that we can recover. Never, not once does it say that we will always be recovering. And yet we want to walk into meetings and be very delicate about it. Well, because that doesn't show humility. I'll always be sick. And a little 20-year-old back over here, dyed-in-the-wool alcoholic and drug addict who has an absolute chance of getting well, is going to walk out leaving. So who in the hell wants to be a part of a fellowship like that? Where you've got to admit that you're sick every day. Guys, I'm going to die with alcoholism. Alcoholism, and this is what it looks like, folks. It's genetic in nature. You either got it or you don't. There's nothing out there that can make you an alcoholic. There's lots of stuff out there that can make you an alcohol abuser. You with me? A drug abuser. But if you're not genetically wired like us, your body will not react the same way as an alcoholic or an addict. In other words, you'll drink up to a certain point and then you'll say, you know, I know the divorce was traumatic or the abuse or whatever, but I'm killing myself with this alcohol. I need to stop. And you'll have the power to moderate or quit. You follow? I wish I could sit down here and watch, because some of you guys are like deer in a headlight. What's he saying? I'm saying you need to stop blaming your alcoholism and drug addiction on stuff out there. Good therapy, some of you, good medication will get you past some of this weird, goofy stuff in your life. But if you happen to be genetically wired like us, this small percentage of us that are like this, nothing's going to change that. It's like you sitting here pissing and moaning because you're a blonde. Buddy, you know how you got to be a blonde? Little pokey-pokey took place, and there was some genetic markers that went in there, and all of a sudden you're blonde. And it had nothing to do with the way you were potty trained. And yet we want to sit in meetings and make this some kind of a psychiatric illness. You'll follow? Alcoholics Anonymous is not about that, folks. This is not a behavioral problem. And some of you need to be qualified. Some of you are looking very uncomfortable right now because you've been blaming everybody in your life for why you're an alcoholic. I'm sorry. I'm not saying it didn't exacerbate it and make it worse. It did. Some of the people that you cats hang around need to be shocked. They're freaking evil. And they're holding you back. You follow? We talk about that tomorrow. But guys, I'm genetically like my twin brother. I mean, he caught the bullet just like me. I mean, we're 21 years old, looking at each other in a little restaurant, little bar in Houston, Texas, and we can see the writing on the wall. When I did a little CA deal for Chris, I don't know when, years ago, and we went to Winchester Cathedral, and we were participating in one of the first CA meetings at Winchester Cathedral. It was one of the coolest things I've ever done. Beautiful cathedral. Y'all know the deal. It was that's where the tomb of the little soldier, you know, the grenadier, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there's nobody in the church at all, and there's busloads of people getting out to look at this gravestone, you know, because a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous are dealing with it, checking this out. But the line in the book that says it says, ominous warnings for which he failed to heed. And we're sitting there in the mason jar in Houston, Texas at 21, and he looks at me and I look at him, and I remember this conversation. I don't know if he remembers it, but I remember it like it was yesterday. And I said, you know, we're going to be just like Pops. We're squashed. He said, nah, we'd never be like Pops. Can we have a couple more beers over here, please? And we're just, you know, and it was like, and we were like we just turned 21 and got to drink legal. We were in that bar. And I had, well, you know, another 19 years in me. And we were just like pops and times 10 and went way past that. I've got a little sister that's a year and 3 months younger than me, is as sweet as can be, and she has never had a problem with alcohol. We tried to make her one summer. We tried to. We thought she could enjoy her life a little bit if she would just ruin it like we were, but she did. But you can't make somebody that's not one of us drink like us. She partied a little bit. She'd get a little loose. And, oh, that was fun. Let's drink some more. She said, oh my gosh, no, I'm starting to feel it. I'm done. You know, Lisa, we're starting to feel it too. And that's why we want to drink a little bit more. And we're going to. Any good alcoholic and addict knows that you got to punch through to the other side when you start to feel it. It was a mess. I got a half sister that's never had a problem with alcohol, and just we were all raised in the same family. There was no goofy stuff going on. Come on, guys. I've got unusually high cholesterol. I'll eventually stroke out. I hope it's from a podium sometime. But eventually, there's nothing they can do. Eventually, my cholesterol will get so high that I'll stroke out. And that's exactly what happened to my dad. And it's genetic. We eat right. We don't. But genetic. You with me on that one? I've never sat in a therapist's office and had them tell us about how you were potty trained. I think that might have something to do with your high cholesterol levels. But I've had 100 of them talk to me about it around my drinking and drugging. In the treatment center industry, guys, the pendulum's swinging back the other direction. We are getting quite clear about this. There's been more studies than you can shake a stick at on the genetic predisposition. And that's what we have to look at. I am one, now what? So what, now what, is the old expression. What are you going to do? And that's what we have to look at. So I'm an alcoholic and want to stop and can't. And I'm in Texas in the food business, and I'm trying to quit. And, oh, my gosh, it's just nuts. And I'm starting to see doctors, and they're giving me some medications. All the doctors seem to think that my problem is medical. You're drinking because you're depressed. You're drinking because you're bipolar. You're drinking because you're manic depressive. You're drinking because you're gay. You're drinking because you're... What, we laugh, but I mean, people are being told that today here, I can assure you, in Sweden. It's crying shame. And of course, every one of those things they gave me another pill for. So I'm taking handfuls of pills, all with side effects that are horrendous. I'm taking 7 pills a day when I tried to commit suicide in 1987. And side effects out the kazoo. I mean, I'm a zombie. I feel like I'm in a cotton ball 24/7. I mean, I am emotionless, and I'm not drinking. I'm drinking on top of it. And the most prescribed antidepressant in the United States right now has 152 possible side effects, including anal leakage. I'm going to take depression, guys. I'm going to just... anyway, I'm trying to save a marriage, and I'm living up in North Texas. Any of you guys trying to get married to save a marriage? And trying to get sober, and I'm trying to move around. And we moved to another city and moved up closer to Myers with the idea that maybe that would help. Fat chance. And I'm... our ex-wives hated each other. You know, they blamed it always. It's Myers' fault you drink so much. It's Myers' fault you drink so much. And of course, his is saying just the exact opposite. And I can't get sober, folks. And I got a job. I'm still in the food business, and I hate it. I just don't like anything about my life. And again, thank God for Myers. I'm working in a bindery with him. Otherwise, I'd be on the street. They've co-signed a little note for me so I can get a little apartment. And y'all know how it is? End-stage alcoholism. I'm not robbing liquor stores, and I'm not going to jail, and I'm not doing a lot of weird stuff that you guys want to talk about nonstop. Early 80s, I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. They qualified me this way in early 1980, 81, when I was up in North Texas. They qualified me this way. They said, do you have a problem with alcohol? And I was drunk. And I said, yes. And he said, welcome. Have a seat. And I did. And that was the extent of the qualifying. You follow? And then they went around and said, well, we have a newcomer, so let's tell how we got here. You ever heard me talk about this? And they did. They did a great job outdoing each other, trying to scare the bejesus out of me. You follow? They were trying to key on something I could identify with. Oh, yeah, I chopped up people and put them in a plastic bag too. I mean, I'm a professional at the time. I'm working. I'm an executive chef at a country club. I mean, I'm doing the deal. I can't relate to this stuff that you guys are talking about. And so I know, I can sense that I'm in the right room, and I can see that some of you guys are talking about some of the same stuff I can do. But every time you tell another war story, it gives me the evidence to walk back out the door. I walk back up and says, buddy, I appreciate those. I've never felt so much love in a room in my entire life, but I'm just not like those people. I remember my first wife saying, I'm so sorry. I thought this would work. I was hoping you'd find a home there. And I said, well, me too. I mean, I gave it a shot, but I mean, these people are fucking evil. But what are we trying to do? We still do it. We laugh about it, and we go right straight back in our meetings, and we do it. The big book is crystal clear. There's a place for my story, folks. From this podium is a good place to tell my story. In a 12-step call, you with me? You're down at the little pizza place around the corner and you're drunk on your butt. And I want to go in there and I'm watching you. And I think I can help you. But I can't go over there and say, hey, listen, buddy, have you found Jesus? I have a spiritual solution for it. I'm going to sit down next to this guy and say, buddy, you know what? 12 years ago, I was sitting at this same table fighting with that same bottle of ketchup. But let me tell you, if you just want to visit for a few minutes, I was just like you. And this guy's going to say, yeah? And you tell him a few stories, and he tells you a few stories, and pretty soon you're ready to set the hook. And he's going to do exactly what Myers said. Sooner or later, this little guy says, well, what did you do? Glad you asked. I whip my little big book out and say, here you go, buddy. I worked some things called the 12 steps. And they're always going to say the same thing. No, I tried it. It didn't work. Buddy, maybe you didn't try the real McCoy. Let me just show you this. But listen, this guy's not even going to talk to you unless you share some stories with him. You guys want to take this stuff we say out of context. That little one-eyed guy from Texas says we shouldn't tell our stories. I'm just saying you should stop telling them nonstop in open discussion meetings. If the cat's in the meeting, he's there. It's time to give him the solution. That's what he came in to hear was the solution. He didn't come in to hear another one of your stupid stories. There's no chapter in the back of the book called In the Scare. All I need in order to help somebody is my story. That's not true. That's not true. I could sit here and tell you about eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas, but that's not going to help a single one of you get sober. I can show you how to finish a 4-step and be rocketed into the fourth dimension. I can show you in 20 minutes how to have a spiritual experience. But we're not going to get a chance to talk about it because we're too busy letting you bore a spitless with your last bust. It takes the breath away. There's a place to your story. In a meeting is not it. We weren't trying to scare each other into recovery. We're trying to fix the world. Myers read a great little paragraph that Bill Wilson had wrote. There's one in the big book that says, we can't take on the personal problems. We need to allow the newcomer to become attached to this thing called God, not us. In other words, we as alcoholics and addicts, as recovered individuals, are not going to take on every little chicken shit problem you have. This is why we're going to talk about tomorrow. So many of you won't even bother to sponsor because you don't think you're equipped to do it. But if you're trying to take on their whole life, you're right, you're not equipped to do it. Who wants to do that? You got the greatest gift that money can't buy. The solution to alcoholism and drug addiction. Let's just share that and let God help them take care of the rest of that. How many people do I see run screaming from the rooms because they just can't sit in another meeting while we try to fix your day? And the arrogance of us to think that we can. Make sense, guys? This is why I love literature-based meetings. This is why we're seeing this big movement all over the country, in primary purpose groups and in into-action stuff here. It's all based in the literature. Let's study the book. Let's get you connected to God, and then God will take care of all that other stuff. And if you don't believe that, we've got a chapter called To the Agnostics that you might want to read. Because God is real. And oh, by the way, in addition to removing the obsession to use, He'll change your life forever. He, she, it, whoever you want to pray to. I can't stay sober in these meetings, and I don't know what it was about that day. I tried to explain it from 1,000 podiums. I am physically really sick, and I've seen a doctor. Myers hooked me up with his doc, and the doc's looking at me straight in the face and said, "Buddy, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You need to go to treatment. You need to do something. You can't keep doing what you're doing on the medication that you're on and not experience problems." And I don't know. I don't know if it was the medications I was taking or the alcohol I was drinking, but I went home that night and I picked up a bunch of return checks in the mailbox, and I sat on the tailgate of my truck and went in and opened them up, and it was just a bloodbath. And I knew I was going to have to go the next day to Myers' wife, and she's going to have to bail me out financially one more time. I'm 35 years old and I'm broke. And there's no friends in my life. There's nobody wants to be around me, and there's no women in my life. And I got up and I went to the medicine cabinet and took some pills and was going to commit suicide. I'm just dead. I'm so done. And nothing romantic, nothing drama, no big long letters. Just I swallowed those pills down, and by the time they hit my stomach, I heard a voice that said, "Don't do this. Go back to AA." And we could talk about that for 2 hours, folks. I heard a voice that said, "Don't do this. Go back to AA." And I did. I made myself sick. And the next morning, I heard the voice one last time. I said, "Don't do this. Go back to AA." And I'm arguing with a voice. Y'all know what I'm saying? I mean, you know how we do. We're all hearing voices anyway. But I'm arguing with this 1,000 times. I still do it in sobriety. If you could crawl into my head sometimes and see what I'm thinking, you'd go, "What the? 21 years sober? My ass." I'm sure it's the same with some of y'all. And I went to work, and I left at lunch and went to the dock and got some doggy downers, and because I'm detoxing hard. And and at night at 6 o'clock, one of my first spiritual experiences was that I sat in a meeting I'd never been to before, and I sat outside the meeting in my truck. It was colder than hell, overcast, I started arguing with myself about going to this meeting. You know, I'm sick and I don't feel good and I'm detoxing and I just need to go on home and I'll go tomorrow to this meeting. You know what I'm saying? And I got propelled out of that truck into that meeting. It's amazing to me. Myers was referring to it, how fast our egos will start to rebuild. You can be bloody with the damage. I've got an old friend of mine in the Hill Country that jumped out of a 4-story building on cocaine and spent 2 months in the hospital, and she used less than a month later. You don't remember the consequences of a week or a month ago. You know, you get caught in that mental blank spot and that internal discomfort comes back and your head says, "I'm just going to have just a little something to knock the edge off." And that's where so many of us in this room are getting tangled up in pain pills and sleeping medications and anything that we think we can legally put in our system to change the way we feel. The problem is it'll trigger the physical craving. And so some of you guys got to be real careful with that stuff, because physically, once the craving gets triggered, you're off to the stupid races. And usually within a day or two, we're back drinking or shooting dope or whatever we're doing. So I don't want to go, but I do. And I walked in that room, and they were all laughing and joking. As y'all have heard me tell the story 1,000 times, I'm miserable and I feel really uncomfortable, and I'm sure that these people are all laughing at me, and I'm so self-conscious. And I got this patch, and it's always crooked. Oh, you don't know if it's a patch or an earmuff. You know, it's hard to pick up chicks that way, too. I got to tell you. And I walked in, and this they're laughing and smoking, and I get real self-conscious, and I back out. And this little girl got between me and the door and wouldn't let me pass. She hooked her finger in my belt loop and says, "Sit down, cowboy." Meeting was fixing to start. And, you know, I've said it from 1,000 podiums, guys. Y'all hear me talking about it. I'm not against young adult meetings, and I'm not against women's meetings. I just need to make a clear statement that if this woman had been in any other meeting, I'd have been dead. If a guy like you had come up and says, "Hey, sit down," I'd have decked you, because I was, you know, a guy I can deal with. But a little 19-year-old girl took my breath away. What? I mean, she was doing what she was supposed to be doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. She was there trying to help another drunk. She didn't give a rat's butt what the attachments looked like. We've gotten so pure in our fellowship. And I was detoxing hard and looked like hell. And she She sat me down in a chair next to her. And we went around the room, and the chairperson had seen me up in North Texas, and instead of letting the meeting just run the way it was going to go, and he said, let's show Chris, let's give him some hope. And they did. And they all went around the room, and they talked about stuff that I could sink my teeth into and that I could understand. And I hear people make sarcastic remarks about it. I don't know about you, but I don't even remember my first meeting. Well, I don't know about you, but I'd remember mine. Those people talked about getting their credit cards back, and they talked about getting jobs and making some money and getting happy again. There's a lady down there that had a sketchbook, and she was sketching the whole time we were talking. And I'm a big fan of art. I'm talentless, but she's in sobriety. I took some art classes, and I did some. And I'm just like, I'm going, man, I could do this. And they were all pulling me with a vision. I know some of you think that's so hokey, but guys, I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. I don't need to hear one more sad story. And I don't want to hear any junior therapist trying to tell me what's wrong with me. They were just saying, we were all messed up like you, and now we're not. Now we're on solid ground. Now we're recovered alcoholics. And I, like, damn, okay. The old geezer after the meeting came up, and I picked up a chip, and a few of them applauded, not all of them. And I'd been picking chips up in North Texas for 7 years. They were done. The old geezer came up and says, are you done? Do you want to stay sober for good? They didn't ask me if I wanted to stay sober one effing day at a time. Guys, the book is crystal clear. I'm going to say this and we're going to move on. I know it drives you crazy because you're buying that PR nonsense. It says that we live life one day at a time. I need to go to God every day and get connected spiritually. This idea that I get up every day and decide if I want to stay sober just today is horse shit. And if you happen to be a real alcoholic, but we still hear people all over. I had a guy in my AA group not long ago, 19 years of sobriety, got up in a meeting, one of the last to share. My name's so-and-so, and I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I got up this morning and chose not to drink. Hot damn! For 19 years, you've been making the right choice. But I can't seem to do it for 30 days in a row. You follow? I can do it while my butt's on fire, but the minute it starts to cool a little bit, I'm okay again. The solution for Chris Raymer is that the obsession to use goes away. And then if things go good, I can stay sober. And if things go really crappy, I can still stay sober. And that's the bottom line. This guy asked me, and I said yes. And he hugged my neck, just like Myers is talking about the way we hug in this program. Real. And the next day, they drug my butt back up to a meeting, and we went. And afterwards, they got on our knees in the back room and did a third step prayer. They asked me. They qualified me the night before. Physical craving, mental obsession. We'll talk about that tomorrow. And then they asked me, Chris, you got a problem with God? No, I just don't think I'm connected. Since you're not. You want to get connected? Yes. Hit your knees. We didn't sit down and read chapters of the agnostics for 30 days. Make a list of what you think God should be like. What? Why are we doing this? It's a question. Are you willing to believe there's something out there bigger than you? Maybe you need to go drink some more. Yeah, I think there's something out there. Good. You want some help? Yeah? Let's pray. We do a little third step prayer. We don't have the power to pull it off. It's saying that God's going to remove the difficulty so victory over that can bear witness to my problems, the victory over this stuff. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Can I get a witness? That's what the book is asking. They explained it like that. We went and got some food, came back. They gave me a little notebook. Says, Chris, while you're sitting at home, shake, rattle, and roll, we'll see you at 6 o'clock, by the way, at the next meeting. But right now, why don't you start working on that fourth step? Everybody said, oh, that's too damn quick. I'm alive today because they went quick with me. Y'all, I know some of you guys are not there. You don't stop shaking for a week, that's fine. Take it easy. Nice. There's a little grace period there. But guys, if you wait too long, your head's going to engage again. And it's going to start telling you that you can go do something stupid and you're going to be off to the stupid races. That's why we see so many people not get sober. And then when they relapse, everybody just wants to pretend that they didn't want it at all. They wanted it bad enough to come into a strange meeting and pick up a chip. They wanted it bad enough to ask for help. Y'all follow? You remember your first trip into AA? Of course you wanted it. But you're not going to keep wanting it unless you get well. Unless you get spiritually connected. That's why there's a rush here. This idea that we can take our time to work the steps is the biggest controversy in AA today, next to whether you can recover or not. And I don't understand it because the book is crystal clear. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Bill Wilson was in Towns Hospital when he had his burning spiritual experience working the steps. Dr. Bob, after his last little debacle, finished the work within a couple of weeks completely. The co-founders all worked the steps in less than a month. But you take 6 months to sit and think about a fourth step. Oh, please. You're 2 weeks later, I've got a completed fourth step, ready to do a fifth step. The guys have already got me practicing the disciplines of 10 and 11. And they've also got me doing this little thing called working with others, which is different than sponsorship, but it's working with others. They've got me involved. Those guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, the second day I was in AA, gave me a job. Y'all understand it? It was answering the phones at that club. Now that sounds pretty quick. I understand that. But they sensed special talent in me. What the truth was, of course, is they had nobody else to do it. And I was just looking bored, and they said, come on. But that's the deal, guys. If you sit around this fellowship, in whatever fellowship you're in, and you get a job, you're going to stay. You with me? Even if it's something, you make coffee, you stack cookies, you set the chairs up, you do something. We're going to talk about it some more tomorrow. But this idea that you can come into this fellowship and get a free ride is ludicrous. I'm the most important person here. Let somebody else do that. I'm just here trying to get my feet on the ground. No, I don't think that's the way we explain this to you. You are going to do what we tell you to do, and you're going to get sober. You follow? We paint this picture that this is some kind of democracy. It's not. It's a dictatorship. You, over here. Okay. But we see it in treatment all the time. The guys will come to treatment like they're all banged up and they're just, just like, oh my gosh, you just walk in and cry and hug them. And they're just so beat up. And it's like, buddy, come on over here. We're going to go to group. Okay. No argument. No nothing. 3 or 4 days, they're doing that, right? Get a little meal, get a little sleep. All of a sudden, you can tell when the trouble's going on. A girl like you will walk back, good-looking woman like that, and all of a sudden, his little eyes look up and says, damn. Oh, man. Danger. We got problems. His ego's waking up. Now, all of a sudden, he's not focused on God and the steps anymore. Now, he's higher power. It's morphing right in front of us. It's just a bloodbath, and that's what we have to want. We see it in treatment all the time. The most perfect patient in the world is perfect for about a week. And then on the ninth day, Damien is born. You can't tell me what to do. I spent $24,000 to come to this treatment center. I'll do this anyway. Where did all that willingness and open-mindedness go? Guys, this is the resurgence of the ego. This is untreated alcoholism. This is what we're battling. This is exactly what Meyer said in his talk earlier. Just going to meetings doesn't treat that. God treats that. That's why we have to do something. This idea that you can just come to meetings and get sober. The people that just come to meetings and get sober are not real alcoholics. I'm sorry. Bless you, you're welcome. But this is ridiculous. For the real McCoy, we got to paint the clear picture. You're going to have to do something. The book says a price has got to be paid. It means you got to get off your butt and actually get into some action. And these guys had me in action from day one. And I'm sitting on the tailgate of that truck, and the obsession, it dawns on me, has lifted. I'm surrounded by liquor stores, by cocaine dealers. I can see the apartment complex where he lives. And he lives right up there, and there's bright light in there, and I know he's there, sitting on my furniture. Still, today, probably. It's Friday, and I've just gotten paid, and I could go get some dope, nobody would know about it. And I could go walk across the street at 7-Eleven and get some alcohol, and nobody would know about it. Y'all need to understand this. I wasn't scurrying around, oh my gosh, I'm in relapse mode. These are triggers that I didn't do any of that. I said, oh my gosh, you know what? I see liquor around me, I see dope around me, and I don't want to use it. I'm done. I knew 2 weeks in that I'd recovered. And people rolled their eyes and said, you can't recover in 2 weeks. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. It wasn't 2 weeks sitting on my ass feeling sorry for myself. It was 2 weeks into action. Yeah. I'm on Texas time, so I'm going to have to go. go fast here. Real quick, Bill Wilson wrote this. It was in a little book called Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. It's on page 119, and some of y'all have a copy of that. I've quoted it in a lot of talks because it was pretty telling to me. This was written very early on in Alcoholics Anonymous. Unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps of recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. Drunkenness and disintegration are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They are the results of personal disobedience to spiritual principles. We must obey certain principles or we die. I didn't write it. Bill Wilson wrote it. The first Cats in Alcoholics Anonymous wrote it. You're going to adhere to some spiritual principles or you're going to die. And the absolute nerve of us to go into a meeting and not tell the newcomer that, I think is ridiculous. My little friend in Canada, Layla, she said it best. She says, the only thing worse than drowning is drowning and not knowing it. I thought that was brilliant. You follow? Sitting in AA for 7 years and everybody made the steps as an option. Oh, these are just suggestions. They're an option. No, they're not. They give us one suggestion and that's it. The 12 steps. But we continue to be so concerned about your sensitive little feelings that we won't tell you the truth. You'll follow? You don't want to play this game, go away. You don't want to work the steps, that's fine. But you need to understand what's fixing to come your way if you don't. Left on my own power, folks. Left in my own head, I will eventually make the wrong choice, the wrong decision. Make sense? That's why I need the spiritual experience to guide me. And I'll say this, and I'm going to talk about it a bunch tomorrow too. This one last thing and I'm going to end. Guys, I get emails from so many of you, and Myers and I, we share the emails because it's 20 years ago, I started speaking from the podium, and really hard 15 years ago, and we were nonstop getting our heads handed to us by some old geezer sitting in the back that you know, middle of the road solution out the bud that had just gotten out of a treatment center and thought he knew it all, we stayed accosted all the time. It got to a point with both of us, we weren't going to talk anymore for a while because we got tired of pissing people off, and it's like. But there were some people in this fellowship, and there was people in Cocaine Anonymous, there were people in AA and NA that would stand tall with us and stand their ground and said, you know, let them say what they want to say, but you're right. Long as you carry a big book and are coming out of the literature and sharing your hope, you're being of use to the fellowship. It's when you get in there and start sharing your stupid opinions that you start killing people. Y'all follow? And they took flack. And we took flack. A lot of y'all have taken flack. I'm going to tell you something, guys. A lot of you guys are sitting in the trench with us, and you've stayed in the trench with us. And for every one of you that have done that, I'm not talking to the people that have been in the trench with us because you know what it feels like. Years ago when I was a semi-competitive cyclist, I pissed poor genetics to be good, but my heart was in the right place, and I rode a lot. And ultimately, when you're in cycling, you'll eventually do a century ride. You'll ride 100 miles. And that's just a rite of passage. You know, I don't know what it's like getting a tattoo that Myers and I are going to do tomorrow night in Amsterdam. And it's a tattoo of syphilis. I don't know what it's... No, I'm just kidding. And it's right. We head out to ride, and there's about 15 of us. And we head out, we're going to do the century. We're going to do it at a nice slow pace, and we're going to all finish together. Anyway, we get about halfway out, and we understand that there's going to be some cold weather coming our way, but we got all brought gears, so we were ready to go. So we headed out about 25 miles out, this cold front hit. This is Texas, guys, and this stuff hits quick and hard. It's ice, you know, and it's like, they said it was going to get colder. They didn't say we were going to get a blizzard. But we're out 25 miles, and so all of us are, and we're warm, we're rested, and we're still like, no, shit, let's go. We can do this. Well, let's finish this century. And so we headed out, and a bunch of people, it looks like a death march. You know, they're dropping like flies out there. And there was six of us that ended up in this town about 25 miles from from our end destination. And we all looked at each other and we all said, listen, we can't do this by ourselves, but together we could do this. There were some real strong competitive riders there. And there was one guy that had a light on his ass end of his bike. So he was going to follow us because it was dark now. We've been doing this all day long and it's dark and we're dying. And we all looked at each other and said, let's go do this. And we all headed out. The minute I got on that bike and headed out, I regretted it. I said, this is stupid. We're going to die out here. The cars can't see us. It's slick as hell. I have no energy. We're out of food. And we do what we did. We did exactly what we said we would do in the store. And when one of the guys would crap out, he would drop to the back and catch his breath, and the lead would take over, and the stronger guys pushed us literally up the steps. And the guys with the light stayed on the outside so we didn't get hit by the cars. And we dragged in 25 miles later to this sports center there where all of our cars were. And I got to tell you something, folks. We finished what we set out to do. We all went in the back. We all took a shower. We got in the sauna. We sat there. There was no conversation. There was no talk. There wasn't a dry eye in the place because we sat there and we realized what we had done. We did something. It wasn't that the ride was so hard. It was that the weather was against us the whole damn way. But we did it. And we got up and we hugged each other's necks and we left. And that's been that way forever. I see those same people in Kerrville, Texas. Every week I see those same people. And we all have the same knowledgeable nod. We don't tell the story. We don't talk about it. We're just connected. We're connected by an experience that we all shared. Y'all know where I'm going with this. And some of us in this room are connected by the experience that we all share of carrying the same message that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob carried 75 plus years ago. Undiluted. This is about God. This is about the spiritual experience. This is about a changed life. This is about recovery. And we take some hard knocks and we dust each other off and we email each other. We call on the phone and we encourage each other. And then we go back to that stupid meeting and we go to the group conscience and we change the format and we get more literature-based meetings and we help each other stay on the path. That's what this entire thing is about. That's why it's such an honor to be here. Thank you. Thanks, guys. I took all these notes. I didn't read one of them. Okay. You think this was fast tonight? Wait till tomorrow. I brought some of the little issue man buttons, issue man, issue women buttons, and some of you guys had asked for it. If you want one, you're welcome to take them. There's some handouts up here. They're going to bring some more tomorrow of some websites that we are particularly fond of. A lot of you guys wanted some downloadable stuff that you can use in your meetings and help with your sponsees. And these are some great websites. We've kind of checked over and made sure there's no goofy stuff on there. And you're welcome to any of that. Cool? Yeah. We'll see y'all in the morning. Thank you.